this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of The Warm Down today. I'm delighted to be joined by ex-Everton, Arsenal, West Brom, Trabzonspor, Nottingham Forest and almost England striker yes. Kevin Campbell. Kev, I don't think I can, I'm sure you know already, but for those watching at home, I don't think I can say enough about how much Everton fans think of you. What's that feel like, to be actually worshipped?
Well, it feels great, obviously. You know, the Evertonians, it was a difficult time for Everton at the time when I came back from Turkey, and there was a small window. That's when there used to be a transfer window in the early March.
Yeah, was it like last Friday or second last Friday of
March?
Yeah,
it was one of, there was only a small window. I came back to the club then, looked like they were going down, and we just connected and ended up, my first game was a Merseyside derby where Robbie Fowler was doing that with the line, and Gerard Houllier was saying that he was eating the grass, but he was doing something else. We know what he was doing, snorting the line. that was my first game, was a Merseyside derby. We got done 3-2 in that. Then we played Sheffield Wednesday at home, and we gave Benito Carboni two back passes straight to him, and he went through and scored two, beat us 2-1.
That's a top 90's name, isn't it? Benito Carboni.
Benito Carboni, you know, he was a damn good player. Well, it was him and
Di Canio
played for them at the time, so they had a really good side. And then after that game, I went on a run of scoring 9 goals in 6 games, so 9-8 in all, and we managed to stay up, which was good. And I think that's where the affinity came from, myself and the Evertonians, and it's still as strong today.
Well, yeah, it still is as strong today. Obviously, I do a bit of research on the stuff that I didn't know about your career before you came in. Obviously, I've known you for a while, Anna, but I just thought, I'll just double check, and I wanted to find out what it was. And I found a post on Reddit by an Everton fan, and he was like, listen, Kevin Campbell is my favourite player. And I read all the responses to it, people tearing up in the responses to it and everything, mate. It's a great story.
Oh, it is a great story. And Steve, you know, anytime I go back to Goodison Park, or anytime I bump into Blues, they always mention that, and they say, you know, we were down. If it weren't for you, you single-handedly done it. I can't single-handedly do it. It was a good team at the time, but they just lacked that a bit more experience up front. But we went on a bit of a tear, like, you know, it was unbelievable what we done. And to stay up, and I think we beat West Ham 6 in the penultimate game of the season at Goodison Park.
Was that the one to secure it?
That was the one to secure it, you know. 6, right, he was in the opposition as well.
He
lost his mind, that guy.
He ended up going on a right load of mad clubs, didn't he, after the
interview? I think he'd done Burnley, Celtic and all that kind of thing. So it was always good to get one over righty.
So, well, let's go straight back on there then, because you came through, and we've had this conversation before. It's like, what the hell was going on at Arsenal at that time, where there was such a, like, a culture of top English strikers with Wrighty. Andy Cole came through there
Andy
as well.
Andy Cole came through just behind. I don't know if you remember, there was a player called Martin Hayes.
No, I don't remember that.
Martin Hayes came through, and when they won the title in 89, Martin Hayes scored something like 20-odd goals. He was kind of a striker come winger. Very good player. Niall Quinn, Merson. So there was a plethora of top strikers coming through at the time. They brought Alan Smith in. Alan Smith was already established, really good player. So it was just the culture at the time. You know, the culture at the club was to make sure Pat Rice developed players. And I was obviously just before Andy Cole. Andy Cole was 3 years behind me. Paul Dickoff was in the same era. With Andy Cole, so some good strikers.
It's a good scouting network then. If it was
proper scouting network, and Pat Rice knitted it all together. He was a top coach.
How old was you in that 88-89 season?
I was 9. I was 18 when I went up. 89. We travelled on a coach.
Well, you're on the documentary, and I remember I was watching documentary in China, and I was like, "That's Kev."
Exactly, there's Kev. You know, I mean, travelling up with the team. And we travelled on the day because it was the Friday. And everyone seems to know where they were that Friday, because it was the two top teams playing the last game of the season on a Friday night. It never happens.
It's Hollywood, man, isn't it?
Yeah, it never happens. So I remember travelling up. Dave Rocastle, bless him, picked me up at 5 o'clock from Brixton Town Hall. We drove up to the club.
Me and AM, that.
AM?
Yeah.
We put all the skips. Me and Dave Rockhouse are doing all the skips with the boots and everything. Put all the boots on the bus. Me, Rocky, the kit man, and the driver drove up to London Colney, pick all the boys up, and then we started our way to Liverpool. George Graham, to kill a bit of time, put on the 70-71 FA Cup final, where he reckons he got a touch. And for about 45 minutes, we were debating whether he got a touch or not. He never got a touch. But that seemed to really break the ice. What he used to
say. I can imagine that's a tense drive up. So Liverpool at the time are the best team in world football.
They were the yardstick. They were the yardstick, regardless. And it's difficult for the likes of us to say this, but they used to win it virtually every year. So when George Graham took over, he said, look, that's who we've got to go for. And we've got to really go for their jugular, because if we're going to win, they're the team to beat. So going up there on that Friday night, he kind of panned it out. He said, look, we keep it tight first half. We score early second half, and then we'll go for it in the last 10 minutes. And that's the way it panned out. It was crazy how it worked out, but what a night. And to be fair to Liverpool and the fans, you know, obviously there was some tears, but they clapped the team off. And, you know, even when we left the ground, there was fans crying. And then we got down to the East Lancs and there was Blues doing a conga down the East Lancs show. So that even made me even more look like them.
That that coach trip, if you've not watched the documentary 89, go and check it out. I think it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah,
it's definitely worth a checking out. So definitely go find that. When on the documentary, it shows you going back to, is it a snooker hall or something like that?
Yeah, it's a place called Winners Club in Southgate. I mean, the coach got stopped just off the motorway, and there was like vans and motorbikes and everything pulled up, and obviously the lad, there was a few drinks floating about, so the lads are putting bottles of brandy underneath the table. But it was because there was mayhem on the streets, so we were detained there for about 20 minutes until they cleared the streets and we could make our way for the coach, and there was like gooners everywhere. So we ended up at the Winners Club, yeah, good few drinks and all that. I think a lot of lads lost their blazers and ties, people looking for mementos. And about 5 o'clock in the morning, myself, Rocky and the kit man jumped on the coach and went back to Highbury, because we were the only ones. All the rest, the cars are at the training ground. So they're not going to drive. So they're just going to get taxis to wherever they're going. So anyway, me, myself and Rocky go back to the ground. And there's a guy asleep on the steps. So we must have probably got back about 5:45. So I said, Rocky, what should we do? And he said, Kev, go and get a couple of beers. Rocky woke him up. And he was telling us all about his night and how his missus don't even know where he is. So we sat there on the steps and had a beer with him. That was Rocky for you though, mate. He was top, top guy.
Well, I honestly don't know enough about him. I obviously know he was very close to yourself, very close to Wrighty. Like, yeah. Most of my audience probably doesn't know much about me, but talk to him as a player.
Rocky was an English Brazilian. That's the best way to put him. He had all the ability of Brazilian. He could play multiple positions, on wide on the right, but I always liked him in the centre of the pitch, because what he was really good at, he could pick the ball up and he could beat his man. Once he beats his man, then the defence are in
trouble. A big solid number eight, wasn't he?
Big solid number eight, never shirked a tackle. One of the nicest, probably the nicest man in football as well. And he ate, slept and bred football, especially Arsenal. So that's why he's so revered at Arsenal. And I'm sure many of you have seen that goal that he scored against Manchester United, where he goes past Robson and Ince and chips Michael, and the ball goes in. That was Rocky. He just had so much ability.
You're a gooner as well, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You came through in the youth team. What's it like playing for your boyhood team?
Well, you got my background. I'm from Brixton, and my first game I went to, I was 7 years old. Couldn't even afford to get in, me and my pals. So we clubbed together and bought a programme, and we used to have to wait till the gate to get opened 15 minutes before the end.
Before they bounced.
So we could nut in and see some of the game. You know, that was what I had to do, because we couldn't afford it. So being the boyhood club and getting scouted by Arsenal and then coming through the ranks, you probably heard the cliche, it's every boy's dream. It really is. And for myself, being a London boy, and knowing some of the guys who are a little bit older than me coming through the ranks, it was special for me. Really was special. And, you know, to win things with the club you supported as a kid, that's special. So we were before the class of 92. Obviously, the class of 92 got their accolades for what they came through with at United. But there was probably 10 players who came through the ranks at Arsenal who made a difference. So, serious.
You were successful as well because you had a Cupness Cup, League Cup, FA Cup.
FA Cup.
Obviously, the title in the
titles,
in
yeah. So, you know, we were successful. And it was special to the Arsenal fans because having 8 or 9, 10 players come through the ranks.
Oh, yeah. It's what
that's what every fan... And the fans could relate to us because they'd known us being in the youth team. They'd known us being in the stands. So it's a lot easier to relate to.
That's why Lingard and Rashford get a lot of time with the local Reds at the moment as well, because we know his old man's on the touchline. We know his old man is stood on the Stretford end since the 70s and 80s. Like we know these things.
But that's the special part about football. And Manchester United as a football club, they've got the record of having a homegrown player in the squad, and it's still going strong. Obviously, the quality that Manchester United produce has been astounding over the years, but rightly so. Lingard and Rashford have been producing as well. They've been playing their part. So fair play, you know. A lot of the time, Mourinho don't pick these young lads, but he's playing them, and they're making a difference, which is good.
You've got an unfortunate record, haven't you? Which is the highest Premier League scorer
yes.
to not have been capped by England.
Well, I'm a trivia question, so that's all right. I don't mind that. No, I mean, the England, there was a lot of good strikers around at the time.
Oh, it's embarrassing when you look at the team now compared to those 90 sides.
Yeah, there was a lot of good strikers around. But, you know, playing on title-winning teams, you'd expect a lot of the title-winning players to be involved with England. I was involved.
What's your peers? You're talking Shearer, Ferdinand, Fowler, Sheringham, this ilk of striker.
Well, if you could imagine if England had them right now, especially to the way the game's played now. So it was really interesting. I mean, I remember... I remember being in the under-21s, Alan Shearer... couldn't get in the under-21s team. It was myself and a lad called Ian Olney.
I do remember him.
Who was at Villa.
Yeah.
Striker. He was playing. And then me and Shearer got put together and we done really well. And then he kind of got ported to the full squad. I was involved with the full squad. And then I think I was in four or five squads. I remember travelling and... everyone else coming on bar me. And I was like, what's going on?
Who's manager now? Is this Al Tell or is this?
No, it was Graham Taylor. It was Graham Taylor. Which obviously you can't control it, but that's life. I'm a trivia question, so that's good.
Oh, there was another question I was going to ask about England. So, Joe, what's your view on England? With obviously your background of nearly getting there with England. Because when there's two men that I listen to that embarrass me with my attitude to England, I think. It's probably the same with a lot of Liverpool and Merseyside-based fans, like Everton fans as well. Don't really care for England. But there's two people that, when you talk and listen to them about England, one's Robbo, one's Wrighty. And when they talk about England, you kind of be like, oh, maybe my attitude's all wrong. What's your feeling on the national team?
I know it's been difficult of late because I believe the England team has been neglected. Mm. I think the way that the clubs and the Premier League are so powerful right now, we were told when these academies were going to be put in place, you're going to have so much talent coming through the ranks that the England team will be set for the next 20 years. We're seeing England win at under 17, under 19 and under 20 level now. But the transition of those players going into first teams and actually developing is non-existent.
Doesn't happen.
So for me, the England team have been neglected and I don't like it. I think the country and the Premier League is a lot stronger with a strong England team. I watch England. I love to see England do well. But I don't know where all that quality is going. I mean, for years, it always drove me mad. England played and didn't have a left footer on the left side. You know, it's out of all of England, we couldn't find a lefty. And I think sometimes players are picked not on they're not picked on merit, they're picked on reputation. And I don't agree with that. Pick the form guys when they're in form.
And well, if you play for Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester United or Chelsea and you're English,
automatically you're
we've got a cap for you waiting for you here. When actually I think the likes of Ryan Sessegnon have to go to this year's World Cup.
Is he young enough? Look, if Fulham get up, great. But if they don't get up, I'm sure someone's going to buy him. These are the next young stars who actually, you might as well start getting them some experience now. And there's good experience in around that England team now. So bringing somebody like Ryan Sessegnon in would be good. Really good for morale and good for, obviously, good for the young lad. So,
but do we want the same old, same old? I mean, Gareth Southgate, I don't think he's an inspiring manager. Mm. I don't think a team's going to look to him and go, like, the way they could with some people that they could have chosen as England manager. And I think you look around that team and it's a bit samey. Ryan Sessegnon is not samey. Yeah. Him, like Rashford, have got that X factor about them. And this is tournament football. This isn't a long season campaign. Mm-hmm. We've seen English players, Gazza especially, as just being a bright spark in a very good team and took us beyond what we probably should have done.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Ryan Sessegnon can elevate this England team, because I think this England team, if we're lucky, we're not even in the top 10. Mm. We might be in the top 10, we're not in the top 8, I don't think. You know, we've got Belgium in our group. That's going to be hard enough to navigate with the side that they've got. Why doesn't someone like Southgate come out and go, do you know what? We're not taking anyone over 28. We're going to bring in Sessegnon, we're going to bring in Sancho, we're going to bring in Foden, we're going to have a good go at it, and we're going to go and play football rather than try and, you know, nick things
in. Yeah, but you know, Steve, look, when you've got international players, seasoned international players, so if you're going to give all these youngsters a chance, you're leaving out players who it might be their last World Cup, or you're leaving out players who have done well in the Premier League. So do you leave them out? Or do you not? So you would say, right, your Raheem Sterling's, because they kind of play the same position as some of these guys. So do you leave a Sterling out, or is it just you're just going to pack the squad full of young talent, which is what you're saying? I don't think there's anything wrong in that.
Get Kevin Keegan back. Loads of young talent. Let's have it.
Yeah, look, that all sounds great, but I think Gareth Southgate believes he has a chance. He believes he has a chance. And it is a bit samey, but which manager wouldn't? England's the Premier League is the best league in the world. You're getting some of the best players in the world who play for England, but the only problem England's had is meshing as a team. Mm. Because individually, the players as good as most teams.
That golden generation, when we had, you know, Beckham, Lampard, Gerrard, Ashley Cole, Rio Ferdinand,
Scholes,
Rooney. Yeah,
I mean, you know, all those guys got undone by Ronaldinho with that fluky goal. Whether he meant it or not, we don't know. But you know, you think to yourself, could they have done more? I believe they could have. Mm. We don't know why, but that Brazil team was special too. So obviously getting done by them was hard to take. But I think after this tournament, Gareth Southgate could start bringing in them youngsters. He can bring one or two in now. Yes, I believe he can, but all of them, I don't think it's right now.
There's a bit of a culture shift, I think, happening. We've seen, is it Chris Willock?
Yes.
Joe's brother, that's gone over to Benfica. We've seen Jadon Sancho head over to Dortmund. Do you think there's a few, there's about half a dozen ex-United lads that are over in Scotland at the moment. Do you think that young lads are starting to look outside the Premier League where they can go and get first team experience? And do you think that's, look at Dyer, he got experience outside the Premier League before he came in.
Steve, I think that the game's changed. Whereas a lot of these young lads, when they play for the big teams, they play in international tournaments. Mm. And the exposure to these clubs are seeing them on a regular basis. So when they're seeing the young talent and they realise that the young talent's up for the contract's up, they're coming to get them. Fair play to the young lads for going, because...
But there hasn't been a culture of it, has there?
No, there hasn't been a culture, but Europe's a small place now. You know, I was lucky enough to go abroad. and understand and see what it's like. And it is totally, it's a culture shock, but it does improve you as a player. It really does. So I think fair play to these young lads for, you know, for not being in comfort zone and getting out there. I mean, my son could have gone out to abroad when he left City, but he decided he wanted to make it in the Premier League. That's why he went to Stoke. So, you know, these guys ain't messing around no more. If they want to make it, they've got to really push the envelope, and, you know, going abroad's good.
When he's, when Ty's contract did come up, it was rumoured, or it was in the paper, that United was looking at him. Is that true or is that false?
The truth, I don't know. Rumours are rumours. You can't follow the rumours. It'll always be difficult if United were interested in him, because obviously that will... It's across the city, isn't it? You know, and sometimes that could prove to be more difficult a move anyway. But we didn't speak to anyone until he finished his studies and stuff like that. And then, as I say, teams abroad came up. We didn't speak to United or anyone like that. I just thought that because Rashford had just broken through. Ty's a striker, Marcus Rashford's a striker. So he just thought, right, where can I go to get an opportunity, a pathway? Because that's the key, you see, Steve. For a youngster coming through, they've got to be able to see a pathway. If they don't see that pathway, what is there for them?
No, you don't want to be 19, 20, 21, going, am I going to get a chance?
You can't even see the pathway. Not am I going to get a chance. I can't even see the pathway. So when we spoke to Mark Hughes at Stoke, he said, look, there's a pathway here. There's going to be a couple of people leaving the club. Walter's left. So that left another gap in the team. So then Ty said, right, I could see it, Dad. I said, bingo, son.
It's not a far drive either, is it?
It's not a far drive. He's happy there. And he's involved with the first team now. He's made his debut and stuff like that now. So, you know, fingers crossed, he gets some more game time.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've not seen him, go and check him out. Tyrese Campbell, I'll throw a link to some stuff in the bottom. Did he score 60-something goals in his last under-16s year?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Fucking goal machine. Like, I genuinely wish, I said this before we started, I genuinely wish United had looked at him if we hadn't, because I do think we really lack a focal point like that. I said Rashford's a striker, he's not the same striker.
Yeah, but I think that your signing of Lukaku has changed the dynamic. I think Lukaku needed to come to United. I think when he was at Everton, his all-round game never... He's a good goal scorer, but his all-round game didn't improve as it is now. Mm. Because when I see Romelu Lukaku now, he's much better with his back to goal.
I think Jose's pulled that out of him. It's one of our go-tos against the team that presses.
Yes.
Is to go from Big Dave to Lukaku.
Got to bypass the midfield so we can get hold of it, or use his physical presence so the defender don't win it, and then you got the speedsters running in behind him. I think Rashford's got a couple like that against Liverpool, didn't he? Where, you know, just his sheer physical strength unnerves Lovren, and then Rashford could get on his bike. So. Yeah,
he's got ridiculously good crossing for a centre forward as well, hasn't he?
Well, most of us strikers we're good at that, you know. Most of us strikers are good at crossing and assisting, but we'd much rather be in the box,
obviously. How would you rank Lukaku's season for United then so far? Because he got a bit of stick towards the middle. He went on a little bit of a dry patch.
Yeah, look, that's the striker's lot. Also, being at United is a different kettle of fish.
£75 million price tag, probably pretty heavy, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, people are looking at him to do more, because it's never enough when you play for Manchester United. You know, you get 25, they want 30. You get 30, they want 35. That's just the type of club and the culture it's been. So, yeah, he did take a little bit of stick. And, you know, some of it wasn't warranted, I don't believe. But just like anything, you've got to have that thick skin. Keep playing. Dust yourself down, and I think he's come on now. And now you're in an FA Cup final. Done us Arsenal fans a favour, beating Spurs, which was quite sweet for us. And, you know, I think he's improved so much as a player, and he's only going to get better now. Now he's been at this is his first season at Manchester United. I could see some great years coming ahead.
What do you think he needs to add to his game, and what did you add to your game? Because I think you're a pretty similar striker.
Yeah.
From 24 onwards, What do you think you brought to your game, and can you see similarities in?
Yeah, you know, I think what Romelu Lukaku is going to learn is patience, because he's got all the attributes to be devastating, but it's that eagerness. He's only young, but it's that eagerness that sometimes he'll burn up his energy doing wrong things. So the older you get, is the cuter you get. You learn when to use your pace, when to use your body, and that will make him a better striker.
He's got a gas tank on him though, because he's
a powerful guy, powerful man.
He keeps it going late into the game as well. There's not many times where you go, oh, he's knackered, he needs coming off him.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is, Premier League, that's fine. But when you start getting in the Champions League, that's where the smarts, the cuteness comes in Europe, because it's a different ball game. And look, he's a Belgium international. It will come for him, for sure. It will come for him. And listen, he was one for the now and the future, and he will be there for a long time, I believe, scoring a hell of a lot of goals.
I've been impressed with him. I think he's probably just going to miss out on 30 goals now because of this little knock that he's got. But I think, you know, almost getting 30 goals in your first season when United have been shite, according to most people.
Look, it's been difficult. I don't, you know, at times United have struggled to, because United started off like a house on fire.
4-0 FC, man.
Yeah, 4-0, you know, you were winning at a canter, looking the part. But we know the season, it's a long old season, and you can't always play well. And unfortunately, you know, look, there's been a lot of stick flying about. Jose Mourinho's coming for some stick as well about the playing style and stuff like that. But it's that lot across the road that makes life difficult, mate, doesn't it?
They've set such a high bar this year.
And this is a gap that you have to address. Manchester United, the club that it is, you know, it has to be addressed. And I'm sure there's going to be new signings to come in, and you will be very, very close next season, if not winners, I believe.
You played in quite a lot of partnerships. Do you think that's a fashion we're going to see return in football? Because I wish it would.
I hope so, because having two up front nowadays is going to cause defences all kinds of problems. Atletico Madrid play it. I think all this one up front and, you know, trying to flood midfield, you can do that when you play 4-4-2 because you could rotate the strikers like that. Two strikers cause defences so much more.
One front, one back.
Yeah, so much more problems. And I watch Atletico Madrid, they play two strikers and they cause teams all kinds of problems. So I'd like to see it come back, because I think it would be so effective now, especially because you can't tackle anybody most of the time. You know, so having two good strikers up there will be really good.
One of your partners went on strike, didn't they, when you left Nottingham Forest?
Well, yes. When I was at Nottingham Forest, I was told I could go to speak to Trabzonspor for tour. I'm allowed to go to speak to him. And I'm at the airport and my phone rang.
And was that a big mobile phone?
Well, you know, it weren't. It was like that size. So I answered the phone. It was Pierre Van Hooijdonk. And he says, "Tell me, is it true?" I said, "Is what true?" He said that the club have said that, you know, you can go. I said, "Yeah, I'm at the airport now." He said, "Right, that's it, I'm not going back." So I said, "Yeah, all right, Pierre, come on, not having the love." He says, "You watch, I'm not going back." They're breaking up our partnership, because the previous season we were the highest goal scoring partnership in Europe. And I got on a flight, went across, ended up signing for Trabzonspor, and I'm there watching Eurosport and all that kind of thing. And I'm seeing, no, Pierre Van Hooijdonk, he's gone on strike. And I couldn't believe it, and I'm speaking to Pierre, "Just go back." He says, no, I'm not going back. I can't believe the club could do that. And it was behind Dave Bassett's back and all that kind of thing. So he had a strong belief in us that, you know, we could take the Premiership by storm. We never got the chance.
Yeah.
It was tough.
It didn't end well in Turkey, did it? What happened?
Well, what happened was the press made an absolute shambles of a comment that the chairman made. There's a saying in Turkey called, it's like yam yam. That means you're gonna eat. So when the press asked the chairman about myself and the next game, he said, I've got no problem, he's going to eat this team. Which is mean, he's going to do them, he's going to play well. Anyway, in the press the next day, I had no idea because my Turkish ain't the best. Big headlines. Chairman's racist to Campbell, calls him a cannibal. So I didn't know anything about this, and I had a friend in Trabzon up there I used to go and see. So I went in there and we used to drink tea and stuff like that. So I sat down with him and he said to me, oh, how are you doing? So I said, I'm fine. He said, no, how are you after what's been said? So I said, what are you talking about? So he explained to me what the chairman actually said and how the press have turned it. So I said, well, I'd get on famously with the chairman. The chairman definitely wouldn't be racist to me. Anyway, I left there, went to training, got into training. At training, you got between 80 to 100 and press every day with you. So it was big headlines, and my teammates come around, and we'd done an interview type thing, you know, a statement and stuff like that. Trained, thought nothing of it. Got home, phone went at home, it was the British consulate asking me, am I all right? Because things can escalate very quickly and all that kind of thing. I said, what's going on there? I said, it's been dealt with. And then the club suspended me from playing.
Oh, shit.
So I used to go in. I trained in the morning before the team. The training ground was unbelievable. So I'd go in and train. When the team came in, I had to go to my room. The team went out and trained, then I could go into the gym. I finished in the gym, shower, I ate. I couldn't even eat with the team.
Oh, fuck's sake.
And then I used to train with the under 21s on the old Cinders pitch every afternoon. So I'd done that for about 2 and a bit weeks. And it was, you know, not even with the team playing. What's going on? So that's when that window in March came. And that's when I ended up going to Everton.
You've had a couple of relegation escapes, haven't you? Famously. Yeah. You had one at West Brom as well.
That was a great escape. The Everton one was an escape. The West Brom one was the great escape because we became the first team ever to be bottom at Christmas and New Year and stay in the Premier League. And I think that mantra was, you know, we can't be the first team to win the Premier League. We can't be the first team to break any of the other records. But we sure can be the first team to do this, and I think that's what drove us on.
What do you think it is that keeps teams up like that? Because you see it so many times, don't you? And you see, is it managers going too safe and thinking, we'll try and pick up points here? Is it a lack of goals? I think it often is a lack of goals, but sometimes the team's just not good enough to get the goals.
Yeah, well, I think you've got to be positive. Of course, look, when you struggle, when you're down there, you're down there for a reason. You're down there because you haven't got the quality that some of the other clubs have got. But what we done at West Bromwich Albion, especially, Everton had the quality. They just didn't have the striker to make it all mesh together. At West Bromwich Albion, what we done, we said, we're going to go for it. And whatever the result is, we leave that on the day of the game. So whether we win or we lose, we put it aside and we go again tomorrow. Keep the smiles on our faces and we get in and we work hard and we train hard and we go for the results. And that's what really happened. It was quite ironic because obviously I just got there in January, and after a while my influence started to grow on the team, and obviously Brian Robson was manager there. He made me captain, and I used to do quite a bit of the team talks, as where I was like, Gaffer, I'll do it. And do the team talks and stuff. So the mindset was good. You have to have a great mindset if you're going to get out of that trouble. And scoring goals is about attitude and positivity. If you want to score goals, you can't rely on keeping it tight. You've got to go out there and score goals. And luckily, we were able to do that.
Yeah, you have to take chances to make chances.
That's right.
That, otherwise, you're dealing with 11 professional footballers against another 11 professional footballers. They're good at what they do. You're good at what you do.
Everybody's trained.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to make something out of the ordinary, don't you, to score? And I don't think people realise that. When people criticising like United's style of play and stuff like that, you're like, is some of this coming from the manager? Or how much do you think relies on the individual players to get them over the line?
I live in Manchester. I watch Manchester United quite a bit. And having been a pro, I know you can't always play that free-flowing football that everybody wants to see. And sometimes you got to understand, it's the opposition schemes against you to make sure you don't play that free-flowing football. Because if you let United play free-flowing football, you're done. So making it tight, making it a battle. You know, teams come up to Old Trafford and bank up. Come and break us down and we try and catch you on the break. It doesn't make for great football. And it sometimes the locals get restless because, you know, you're not beating the brakes off teams. So it is difficult. It really is difficult. I think Jose Mourinho's got a difficult task on his hands, obviously, now with what's going on across the road. But if there's anyone who can, he can do it. He's going to have to do it. He's going to have to find a way.
You're doing some stuff in Iraq. You tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the Bring Hope Humanitarian Foundation. We go out to refugee camps, and we bring medicine, we bring football boots, we bring footballs, we put pitches in. It's about giving back. So we give back out there. We're doing it in Lesotho in Africa as well. And it's really made my life, I'll be honest with you. You know, sometimes I hear people moan about how tough it is over here. Well, when you go over there and you see these kids in the refugee camps, you know, they haven't even got shoes. Mm. And, you know, war-torn country and, you know, ISIS and all that kind of thing. And you see these young kids and they've got a smile on their face. They're so happy and lovely. So doing that, that's one of our great feelings to be able to do and give back medicine or anything they need, books, colouring pencils, whatever. So, you know, it's important for us.
Is there any way we can help with that? I'm going to throw a link in.
Well, www.bringhope.info.
I'll throw it in there.
Check it out. And whatever you donate, you could donate money, you could donate whatever. You know, it will be well received, honestly, because there's a lot of people who need it.
All right, Kev, you've got some strong opinions on pizza and what belongs and doesn't belong on there.
Big time.
Straight down there, man.
Look, pineapple on pizza, no way, no how, no chance. Pineapple should not be on a pizza. No way.
Get fucking told. Kev, this has been brilliant. Thank you very much, mate. Thanks for coming along.
You're welcome, Steve. Hopefully next time you'll invite me again.
Well, I think we're probably going to be doing some big stuff for the World Cup. So,
brilliant.
Anytime, if you're not too busy, because it sounds like you might be a busy man over the World Cup.
Might be a busy man, but listen, if I can, I'd be more than happy to come on.
Right, go and give Kev a follow on Twitter. Check out the link in the description below. Thank you guys for watching, and I'll see you in the next one. Laters.